If a train leaves Washington, D.C. at noon, heading toward New York, traveling 30 miles per hour, and a train leaves New York at 2 p.m., headed toward D.C., traveling 50 miles per hour, and the route is 380 miles from D.C. to New York, at what time will the trains pass each other? Now, for those of you who haven't been in a mathematics classroom in a while, that's a word problem, an algebraic word problem. Unfortunately, thanks to my children, those kinds of problems have re-entered my life after a long, happy absence. Algebra is not my strong suit. However, I know that we have a whole crew of talented mathletes in the congregation. A number of middle school and high school students who are taking algebra and calculus and trigonometry and statistics. Many of them are seated in the corner of the balcony. And as I look at the balcony, I also see a college student, a college professor, and a high school teacher. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to repeat that word problem. And at the end of my sermon, I'm going to see how many of our teenagers have come up with an answer. Not necessarily the right answer even, but an answer. Here's the word problem again. If a train leaves Washington, D.C. at noon, heading toward New York, traveling 30 miles per hour, and a train leaves New York at 2 p.m., heading toward D.C., traveling at 50 miles per hour, and the route is 380 miles from D.C. to New York, at what time will the trains pass each other? So we'll let our teenagers work on that, okay? For the rest of us, a simpler mathematical word problem. If I have one apple and I give it away, how many apples do I have? Zero. That's pretty easy, right? If I have one apple and I give it away, I have zero apples because one minus one equals zero. That's arithmetic, right? Except that Jesus wasn't very good at math. Now, we read a portion from Luke chapter 16 just a moment ago, and we'll come back to that. But in Luke chapter 17, Jesus said, "Those who try to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life will save it." Now, that makes no sense as a mathematical formula. If I have one apple and try to keep it, I will have zero, Jesus says. If I have one apple and lose it, he says, I will have one apple. If I try to save my life, I will lose it. But if I lose my life, I will save it. So either Jesus wasn't very good at math, or he was trying to make another point entirely. Let me tell you a story. A few months ago, I was standing right here, taking part in a funeral service for one of our church members. In the middle of that service, I noticed a man come in the back doors. He seemed to be having trouble getting through the doors, and he seemed to be having trouble walking, very halting movements as he made his way in. He made his way to the back pew, and he sat down with a plunk. I didn't recognize this fellow. The service went on. After the service, Janet Moyer came to me and asked me to help. It seems this man had had a bit of an accident. And so I went outside to the front porch, and Martel Galloway, our tremendous custodian, and a few others were outside on the front porch. It turns out that this man, this guest to a funeral in our church building, has MS, multiple sclerosis. He uses a motorized wheelchair. And he was coming to this funeral. He parked his vehicle in the parking lot. He hauled himself out of his car, got into his wheelchair, and drove those 450 feet that you heard about around to the front door and up the ramp to the building. The doors were closed, and so he pushed the handicap button, which is a fantastic, fairly new addition to our church building. And for whatever reason, the button didn't work. So this man, in his wheelchair, coming to a funeral in our church, was trying to open the door on his own. And somehow or another, his wheelchair rolled off the edge of the platform that's a bit higher than the rest of the porch, and his wheelchair just dumped him out onto the front porch. And that man picked himself up, pulled open the doors, made his way across the narthex, opened the back door, and that's when I saw him shuffling along to the pew. I was mortified. The man could not have been nicer. Could not have been nicer. Martel was extraordinary in helping several other people. I can't remember, maybe Ed Moyer or Jim Shearer, John Hatch, I can't remember who was here. But together, there we stood in our funeral suits, all dressed up, picking up that very heavy motorized wheelchair and getting it up the step and into the building. I was so glad to help. I would do it 1,000 times again if I needed to. That's not a problem. But here's what I know. As kind and generous and hospitable as this congregation is, that shouldn't happen. This is a beautiful building, but it needs to be, and it can be, more welcoming to people like that man in that wheelchair. That's just the fact of the matter. It can be and should be more welcoming to everybody. That's what the Building 2020 plan and the Capital Campaign are about. To take our turn in this moment to make the building work better and easier for as many people as possible. So in a moment, you will hear more about what you can give to this building campaign. We together will be asked to give our money to make these changes and improvements to our building. So here's what I'm asking you. Give as much as you can. Amy and I have made our pledge already. We've made our pledge to the annual fund of the church and to the regular budget, and we've made our pledge to the capital campaign. You need to know that the preacher is not exempt from giving to the church. Nowhere in my contract does it say that. But I'll be honest with you. I filled out those cards and I thought, you know, there are other things we could do with that money. We've got 2 kids who'll be in college before too long. We could do some fun stuff with it. But we're choosing to give away a portion of our money to this community of faith. Should we give more? Probably. But we hope we're doing our part. To use the language of this word problem from Jesus, we're choosing to give away a portion of our life. We're choosing to give away a portion of our money. And here's what I think happens when we together do that. We will give away a bit of our money, and it will come back to us. Now, we won't get the cash back. That's not how it works. But together, we will all give away portions of our lives. Together, we will all lose some money, if you will. And in the process, we'll build a new entrance and a new elevator and a new driveway. And that man in that wheelchair, or someone else with different needs, will be able to come into this building easily and safely. I think that's what Jesus was getting at with these words. If you give your life away, another person gets it, and it comes back to you through that person. If you give your money away, another person gets to roll through the doors easier. That's what it means to give your life away, to give your money away. Someone else benefits, and the whole world is a better place. You see your life come back to you, reflected in an easier life on the part of another. So let me tell you another story. You've heard it already, but a rich man had a manager. And the manager somehow was accused of squandering the rich man's property. So the rich man summoned the manager and said, "Show me the books. Give me an accounting of your management, or you can't be my manager any longer." Who knows what this manager was experiencing? Maybe he had kids that needed to go to college. Maybe his sick mother-in-law needed his care. But he said to himself, "What am I going to do if the boss fires me?" I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. So he summoned his master's debtors. He asked the first one, how much do you owe? The person said, 100 jugs of olive oil. He said to him, take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 50. Then he asked another person, how much do you owe? The person replied, 100 containers of wheat. The manager said to him, take your bill and make it 80. And the rich man commended the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly. That's a story that Jesus told. That's the story that Andrew led us in reading earlier from the scriptures. That's a pretty tricky tale, because Jesus comes across as kind of slick in that story. Pretty conniving. Make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, Jesus said. So if you're going to do that, make a lot and give it to the church and we'll call this even. We might name the elevator for you. But I'll tell you what else to do. I'm going to ask you to go home and figure that story out on your own, because I'm not sure that I understand it exactly. But when you put that story together with these other words about losing your life to save it, here's really the takeaway for me from these teachings of Jesus. Here's what I take from that. The idea that it's important how you make your money. It's important how you earn your money, and it's important how you spend your money, how you use your money. Now, those two little scriptures from Luke are much more complicated than that. But for me, as we think about the capital campaign and as we think about how much we can give to our church, that's the takeaway. It's important how we earn our money, and it's important how we spend our money. There's another idea as I stand here and think about the scripture today, particularly as I think about our friend Martel and Debbie's death yesterday. And that is that life is difficult. It's just difficult sometimes. Can be really sad and really complicated and really confusing. This poor manager in this story was made up. We don't know the backstory, but it seems he was having a tough time, right? The books were a mess, outstanding debts. He was about to lose his job. And in this strange story, he did the best he could. That's a part of what's implied in that story that Jesus told. This man's life was very difficult. And he did the best he could. And I've thought about poor Martel this week. They put his mom on a ventilator almost 2 weeks ago. And we hoped and prayed for the best, and doctors and nurses cared for her. And then at some point they said to him, you need to make some decisions about your mother's health. And some of you have had to make those same decisions where you're asked to remove life support, different things like that. Those are difficult decisions. Life is complicated, my friends. And I've talked with enough of you to know that your lives are complicated in all kinds of ways. You may not be in a financial pickle like this manager in the story. And you may not be making life and death situations, decisions at the hospital. But maybe you're scared for all kinds of reasons. Your aging parents, or mental health struggles in your family, or just a fear of the world in general. All of those things. Life can be really tough. Life can be difficult. I think that's part of that strange story. Life is difficult, and we do the best we can. And so as we sort through that story and as we sort through our own lives, I think it's important that we remember that life is difficult not just for us, but life is difficult for our neighbors and our friends and our family members and our coworkers. So let's remember to be gentle with each other gentle with each other. We help each other. We love each other. We cut each other some slack. We show each other some grace. So I hope that's what you will think about today. We have the chance to do good things together, so I hope we will give generously. Think about how you make your money. Think about how you spend your money. And remember that in the middle of all of that, life can be very difficult. Be kind. Be kind and be gentle. So to our middle school and high school students, the word problem. If a train leaves Washington, D.C. at noon, heading toward New York, traveling 30 miles per hour, and a train leaves New York at 2 p.m., heading toward D.C., traveling at 50 miles per hour, and the route is 380 miles from D.C. to New York, at what time will the trains pass each other? Friends in the balcony with your hands up, who has an answer for us? Clara. 6 o'clock. Does everyone in the balcony agree with Clara? Anyone in the choir have a difference of opinion? You don't need to know what train it is. Anyone else? Betsy Bennett, retired math teacher. Are they correct with their 6 o'clock answer? They're all correct. Thank you very much. So I'm going to tell you the truth. I didn't look up the answer because I don't care. And I didn't try to do the equation because algebra is not my strong suit. And I've never been really sure why those trains needed all that information anyway. But here's an idea. Here's an idea that came to me as we think about trains and things that are difficult and capital campaigns. The African proverb, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So friends, let us travel together. As we build a stronger welcome, let us build together. As we support the capital campaign, let us give together. And as we make our way through the difficulties of life, let us go together. Amen.